This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Scott Watley. We appreciate you being with us. Well, we are glad to have our good friend Blake Harris with us, an attorney with Mile High Estate Planning. Check out that website, milehighestateplanning.com. Blake, how are you, sir?
Scott, I'm doing well on this Friday. How about yourself?
I'm doing wonderful. Hey, we made it through a short week, didn't we?
Yep. It sure goes faster when you take Monday off. I think you should take every Monday off.
Hey, I'm for that. I'll sign that petition with you, sir. Well, Blake, hey, man, you know, I love having you on. We learned so much about estate planning, and, you know, you and I were talking the other day about something, and, boy, I love these three words, protect your legacy. And that is really what this is all about, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Planning ahead, an ounce of prevention, worth a pound of the cure, and protecting your legacy, protecting your assets, and protecting your family from some of the things that go wrong when you don't plan ahead.
Sure. All right. Today, we're going to talk about probate a little bit. And I was just kind of walking around the office here, talked to a couple people and said, do you even know what this is? And they said, no, but I've heard you don't want to go there. So, I think there are a lot of, you know, misconceptions out there and just lack of understanding even about, you know, what probate is, when it goes into effect, and, you know, what all the different things about it. So we're going to spend the next half hour kind of clearing that up with you. So let's start out with just, you know, kind of what is probate and then, you know, when it kind of goes into effect.
Sure. So as you mentioned, my firm is milehighestateplanning.com. There are two types of things my firm does. We set up plans, estate plans, and then we help to administer or probate the estate after an individual passes away. So today, for the next half an hour, I'd really like to talk a lot about what probate is. There's a lot of misconceptions. I'm going to take some time and we're going to answer a lot of questions about probate. So the first thing to understand is there are two types of probate. There's probate after an individual passes away. This process tends to take about 1 to 2 years, and it can cost anywhere from a few thousand dollars to tens of thousands of dollars, depending on the size of the estate, the number of beneficiaries, and most importantly, whether any disputes arise among beneficiaries, heirs, and creditors.
Okay.
The other type of probate is lifetime probate, and this happens when an individual, typically an older adult, becomes incapacitated, and their family members need to go through a guardianship and conservatorship process in order to take over management of their financial affairs. Lifetime probate is usually ends up being much more expensive than probate after someone passes away, because with lifetime probate, it can go on for several years or in some cases, decades.
All right. Again, if you're just joining us, Blake Harris is with us, milehighestateplanning.com. Be sure and check out that website. A lot of great information. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So, Blake, when you first meet with people and you start, you know, setting up that estate plan, is the probate part, you know, like in the will? Is it in the trust? I mean, how does it even get written up?
Sure. So there are three reasons that people come to meet with me to do planning work. One is avoiding lawsuits. The other is avoiding paying for the rising cost of long-term care. Don't want the nursing home taking the family home. And the most common reason, though, is to avoid probate. We talked about a minute ago, the cost associated with probate while you're alive and right after you pass away. And the best thing you can do is to set up a plan that will keep your family outside of probate. There are several different ways to avoid probate. However, in most circumstances, the best way to avoid probate is by creating a revocable living trust. A revocable living trust allows you to pass property outside of the probate court, so no need to hire attorneys, wait for a judge's approval, risk a family fight. The revocable trust will avoid that entire probate process. And then with the trust, you can keep that property safe for the beneficiaries so that in the event that any beneficiary is sued or goes through a divorce or has to declare bankruptcy, their inheritance remains a protected asset. So that's how you avoid probate after you pass away, with a revocable living trust.
Okay.
I also mentioned lifetime probate. In order to avoid lifetime probate, the best thing to do is have a the only thing to do is to have a complete set of incapacity documents. There are four documents which every individual age 18 and older should have. The very first one is the financial power of attorney. A financial power of attorney allows another individual, in the event that you become incapacitated, to take over management of your financial affairs. And then there are three medical documents. The first medical document is a medical power of attorney, which allows another individual to make medical decisions on your behalf. Then there is a HIPAA release. HIPAA is a federal law which protects the privacy of your health care. In the event that you become incapacitated, you want your agents to be able to access that protected health care information and share it with the doctors to make informed medical decisions. And then there's also, finally, the living will. The living will says that if you are in a permanent vegetative state, that you do want to have life support removed.
Okay. Wow. So when you sit down with someone to go through this, and a lot of people probably for the first time, I mean, they have to look at you like if you were here in studio with me, I'd be looking at you saying, there's a lot to an estate plan that's thorough.
I get calls all day long. People call and say, how much is a trust or how much is a will? And really the answer is you don't want a trust or you don't want just a will. What you want is a full estate plan. So a full estate plan should include the incapacity documents that I mentioned. If there are children or real estate, a revocable trust. You should also have a will. When you have a will, when you have a trust, you should also have a backup safety net will or a pour-over will, which distributes all of your assets into the trust. And then you also want to make sure that you fund the trust. This is a common mistake that I see people who, when they do it themselves or when they use an attorney that may not actually specialize in estate planning to help set up their trust, they forget to do. That is fund your trust. The majority of people have either three or four types of assets, depending on whether or not they own a business or a rental property. The first asset that everyone has is money in the bank. If you've got money in the bank, you can update the beneficiary designation directly to the name of your beneficiaries, or if you want to give your beneficiaries protection over that money in the event that they are sued or divorced, then you can set up the transfer on death designation or the beneficiary designation on those accounts to the name of your trust. That's asset number one, funded into your trust, your money.
Okay.
Number two, real estate. You can sign a quitclaim deed, or Colorado allows for the use of a beneficiary deed or a transfer on death deed that upon your passing transfers the property into your trust. And then the third asset, which everyone has, is tangible personal property, your clothing, your jewelry, your furniture. You should sign an assignment that says any tangible personal property that you have now or later acquire is transferred into your trust. Those three assets, financial accounts, real estate, and personal property, comprise 90% of the assets that most people own. And in some cases, there will also be a business or a side rental property. And with those, we just do a simple LLC or C-Corp assignment and have those properties transferred into your trust. You want to make sure to fund your trust when creating an estate plan. Once you have your incapacity documents, your will and your trust, and your funding documents, then you've got a complete estate plan. You can sleep well at night knowing that your family will likely never end up going through probate or have to probate any portion of your estate.
You got a question in real quick here, and let's see here. They are asking if we could just take a minute and give the process. If you have a loved one that dies, What is the next step the next day or next few days as far as being legal? If you have a will and all that and estate, do you have to file that with some kind of court? Do they call you and you take care of it? I mean, what are kind of the steps when you have a loved one die, which is a pretty good question. Yeah.
Sure. So there's a several-step process to probate an estate, and I will walk our listeners through that process. But before I walk the listeners through that process, I want to give one tip, and this tip is going to make listening to your radio show so valuable. Don't pay the debts of a loved one right when they pass away. If the credit card bill comes in, don't pay it right away. There's a temptation that, oh, dad bought a $200 umbrella before he passed away, or there's $3,500 on his Amex. Let's just go ahead and pay that off real quick. Don't do that.
Okay.
The reason why is, number one, if your state doesn't have enough money, you could be personally liable for that debt. And number two, you can usually, in the probate proceeding, negotiate that debt. Our team of attorneys are experienced in negotiating with creditors, and we can help to reduce the debt. So I've got to give that warning right when you start talking about to do when someone passes away. Don't make the mistake and pay that bill. What I do generally recommend is, and most probates, when there's more than, the first thing you have to do is determine what type of probate it is. There are three types of probate in Colorado. There's small estate probate. For small estate probate, total value of the estate is less than $60,000, and there's no real estate. If there's $1 worth of real estate, you're going to be in the other two types of probate.
Okay.
But if there's less than $60,000 and no real estate, then you do not need to do anything but go online, Google small estate affidavit Colorado, print it off, notarize it. And generally with small estate affidavit, I don't even recommend hiring an attorney.
Okay.
If there's real estate involved, then generally I will recommend hiring an attorney. And if there's a possible contest, then I definitely recommend hiring an attorney. The next type of probate is informal probate. And sometimes couples, clients will attempt to probate an estate on their own, go through an informal probate. They end up messing something up. Then they have to get attorneys involved in later, and it ends up costing a lot more than had you had legal counsel from the beginning.
Sure.
So I recommend for informal or formal probate, if there's any real estate in the account, if there's any real estate in the estate, or there is a possible dispute, or there's more than $60,000 in assets, speak with the professional. My firm is able to do no upfront fee probate, so clients don't have to come in and write us a big check for legal services at the very beginning of the case. We can basically take it on a contingency fee. Our probate work can be done on a contingency fee where we just get paid down the road once the estate has liquidity. Lots of clients, they may not have money themselves, but they're about to inherit big assets. They don't have to upfront pay for their attorneys. And then we will help the clients, or in some cases, we can serve as the personal representative for the client. And under this process, we will first supply the court with the proper paperwork to get an individual appointed as personal representative. This is often the biggest hurdle in the probate process. The court will want to have the death certificate. They want to have an original last will and testament. And they'll also need information on the beneficiaries of the estate, the individual attempting to be personal representative. Once all that information is given to the court, then the court will appoint the personal representative. Now, once a personal representative is appointed, there are several things that they must do in order to probate the estate.
Okay.
Once they're appointed, first they're going to have to complete an inventory. They need to make a list of all of the assets that the individual who passed away owned at the time of their death, including the value of those assets. They need to list off any real estate, any cars, any tangible personal property, any money in the bank account. Next, they're going to have to run a notice to creditors. You have to run an ad in a newspaper in the county where the individual passed away once a week for 3 weeks. And then 4 months after that first newspaper publication is run, the creditor period ends. You have 4 months to stake your claims against the estate. After that, you are forever barred. At that point, we will take a look at all the debts, and at that time, we can start deciding which assets and which debts to pay, which debts to negotiate, and which debts we may be able to completely escape paying. During that notice to creditor period is also probably the time when the estate is liquidated, personal property is sold, real estate is sold. So we'll have some money in the bank from the liquidating the estate, and then we'll pay off any creditors. Once all the creditors have been paid off, then we can file to close the estate. In general, probate takes about 1 to 2 years because it takes some time to gather information, gather information from clients and get signatures from beneficiaries. But by law, probate must last at least 6 months. once that 6-month period has passed, and in some cases we have closed estates as soon as quick as 6 months on the dot, months to the day, we will file the closing paperwork with the court. We can either file it informally, where it's a pretty simple form that we give to the court, and then 1 year after we file that, the personal representative is released from all liability, or we can wait, or we can file it formally, where a little more information is needed for the court, have to give a complete accounting to the court, and then at that time, as soon as we file that paperwork, the probate is closed, the beneficiaries have received their money, the creditors have either been paid or forever barred, and then there's no liability on the personal representative going forward.
All right. Blake Harris is with us. MileHighEstatePlanning.com is the website. And if you get a few minutes, go to that website, take a look at a lot of great information, but mainly go to the reviews and just hear what Blake's clients have said. A ton of great reviews on there. As a matter of fact, all of them 5-star. And I promise you, as we said at the beginning, protect your legacy. That's what this is all about. MileHighEstatePlanning.com. Blake's number, 720-924-6171. We got to take a short break, and we'll be back with more with Blake Harris right after this.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the asset manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Got a road trip planned for getting ready for your next outdoor adventure? Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at D&D Tire Service. At D&D Tire Service in Parker and Aurora, they understand automotive issues can be a headache, and they never come at a convenient time. D&D Tire Service is family-owned and operated and is truly your one-stop shop for all of your automotive needs. All tires are reduced, and for a limited time, there are some great rebates saving you up to $200. From belts to tires, wiper blades, oil changes, D&D Tire Service has you covered. For the location nearest to you, call 303-699-7337. That's 303-699-7337. D&D Tire Service is the official auto repair shop of Sportsman of Colorado Radio. Let D&D Tire Service keep you and your family safe on the roads. DndTireservice.com.
Here's why you need KLZ's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh, on your side. He understands how the jury thinks.
In the context of a personal injury case where you have been hurt by someone else's negligence, the idea with that is that you're then going to try to recover to get back to where you were just prior to that incident occurring. And what that really means from a juror's perspective is that you're going to be asking them to award you money. So when we talk about fairness, we're talking about what six people that don't know you, that hear evidence and have to make a unanimous decision, will decide as to what fair value is. And so you and I, when we get hurt, have definitely an idea of what we think it's worth to us. But the question is, what can you articulate to those other individuals who don't know you and are not involved in this process to get them persuaded about what it is that they think the case is worth?
Call now for a free consultation. 303-806-8886. Flesh and Beck Law. They get results.
Rush to Reason with John Rush. Weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. If you're just joining us, my name is Scott Watley. We are glad to have Blake Harris with us from Mile High Estate Planning. .com is the website. Once again, please check that website out. And folks, this is something that all of us really tend to put off, is getting this done. But I promise you, Blake is a great guy, someone you can really trust to be very thorough with you. And I hope you'll just give him a call, 720-924-6171. Let him know you heard him here on Haystack Help Radio. and he will get you fixed up. And Blake, amid still all this, the COVID-19 things, I mean, you're pretty open to, you know, meeting with people there in your office if they're comfortable with that, or the Zoom meetings, or just any way they want to do it, you can take care of.
Right. Yes. So our offices are open. We are taking extra precautionary measures to avoid the spread of COVID-19. But we do have beautiful office space in downtown Denver next to Union Station with free parking. Or we are available for Zoom or phone consultations as well, which is what a lot of our clients have been doing lately, too.
All right. Good deal. And hey, he said free parking downtown. You don't hear that much, and it's just right next to his office, so very convenient as well. So, Blake, got a couple of questions here, and then we'll get back to our little topic here. But it said, can an executor take everything in a will, or can they make changes as an executor?
So, so I'm going to rephrase the question. Okay. To make it a little bit easier, it's what power does an executor have?
That's perfect.
And not only does our firm create the plans and administer them, we spend a bit of time fighting over the plans. And sometimes what will happen will be there will be a question of under the terms of the will being unclear, or questions about the powers of the executor. So what powers do the executor have? Executor has a duty to all the beneficiaries, and certain issues come up with executors. The two most common problems that happen with the executor are, number one, overpaying themselves. As a personal representative, as an executor of an estate, you have the right to reasonable compensation. If the executor is paying themselves somewhere between maybe $30 or $50 an hour as a non-professional, that tends to be acceptable. But if the executor is paying themselves too much, or they are allowing themselves to be compensated in a different way, such as continuing to live in the home of the decedent and not paying rent, then the beneficiaries should complain. They should hire an attorney or file a motion with the court on their own to say that the executor is mismanaging the estate property. And this type of situation comes up often, where an individual passes away, one of the beneficiaries lives in the home, and for a variety of reasons, they don't want to move out. They also might be the executive of the estate, and then it's going to be on the other beneficiaries to complain to their court to get the probate process moved along. Probate, as I mentioned, takes 1 to 2 years. However, in some cases, it can last a lot longer than one to two years. If a beneficiary is not moving out of the home, then it's going to be the executor's job to kick them out of the home. And if the executor is not doing that, then it's going to be on the other beneficiaries to compel that executor to take action and remove that person from the home. Something else I want to talk about is will contest. What happens if mom or dad writes a will and cuts out one of the children from the will, and the children don't feel that that was done properly? There are three ways to contest a will. Number one, argue lack of capacity. Number two, argue insane delusion. Or number three, argue undue influence. If you were cut out of your family's estate plan and you feel that was done improperly, you can bring a will contest, and you should really start by arguing all three. It does take experts usually to come in, review medical records, and testify as to the capacity and the situation that the testator, the one who drew up the will, drew up the trust, had when they created it. But will contests are becoming more and more common, certainly as we're seeing more and more blended families, and often parents are not leaving enough money to their children, or they're not leaving enough money to their spouse, and then one of the family members needs to come in and contest the will. An important thing to remember, if you are a blended family, is that if somebody writes a will and cuts out their spouse has a legal right to an elective share. So when you create your estate plan, you need to consider the elective share. In Florida, where I'm originally from, there's a flat 30% elective share. If you're married for one day, your spouse passed away, you have a right to 30% of your estate, regardless of what the will says. You can get more than that, but you have a right to at least 30% of it. Colorado is a little bit more complicated. Colorado gets 5% of the estate for every year married, up to 10 years, up to 50%. So if somebody writes a will and cuts out their spouse in Colorado and they've been married for 20 years, that spouse can still come in and take 50% of the estate. And elective share is something very important to think about with blended families.
Wow, that is great information. Now, let me ask you this. If a will is contested and it's challenged, you know, in the probate court, if the person challenging the will manages to, you know, successfully maybe win that provision of the will, then is the rest of the will intact, or then is the whole rest of the will kind of in jeopardy as well?
So I'm going to give you the typical attorney answer, and it is, it depends.
Okay.
However, in most circumstances, you can usually get the entire will thrown out. Lots of contracts have provisions that say if a certain portion of this will, a certain portion of this contract is found to be unenforceable, the remaining portions should remain in a force. That is not the situation. Generally, that's not the situations with wills. If a portion of the will is found to be executed under undue influence, lack of capacity, or insane delusion, generally the entire will is disregarded, and the previous will signed or the intestate laws will take over the distribution of the property.
Okay. Wow. Great information. So when people first come in and sit down with you, and you'd kind of do that interview process with them to figure out where to get started with everything, do some people do this in stages, or is it really better to do, you know, your complete estate plan with all the different things in it at one time?
Sure. So what I say is I don't ever send anybody out of my office with three wheels on a car. Whether someone needs a very simple, small, will-based estate plan or a complex international registered trust estate plan, we're going to give them a full estate plan. So okay. If clients need just a simple will, we'll get them a simple will, and then we'll do all their incapacity documents, the financial power of attorney, the medical power of attorney, the HIPAA release, and the living will. If clients need a trust-based estate plan, we're going to do all the documents that are including the will plan, plus the trust document, plus all the documents needed to fund that trust as well. So generally, I say take it off and do it all at one time. And then part of my process, not only do we have a free initial consultation, we give free lifetime review. So if you create your plan with Mile High Estate Planning, then 3-5 years down the road, you have a question about your estate plan, you can give us a call at any time. Ask a question, and we do this on purpose because we don't want to drive away our clients with hourly billing, just the opposite. We want our clients to continue to communicate with us so as their life circumstances change, we can keep their estate plan in line with their goals.
Great. Protect your legacy. Mile High Estate Planning, milehighestateplanning.com, and Blake Harris. Give Blake a call, 720-924-6171. Again, 720-924-6171. As he just mentioned, it is a free consultation, so I hope you'll do that today. Well, Blake, thank you for your time, sir, and we will look forward to our next visit with you.
Scott, it's always so much fun being on your show. I hope the listeners today got a little bit of good advice on probate and hopefully on how to avoid probate, and look forward to being on your show again soon.
All right, sir. Thank you very, very much. That's Blake Harris, milehighestateplanning.com. Check it out. 720-924-6171. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Scott Watley for Stack Optical. Stack Optical has been providing the most comprehensive quality ocular care for their Denver patients for over 50 years. And as a family-owned business, trust me when I say they have seen hard times before. And no doubt the days we are living in are very difficult for us all. But owner Alan Stack and his wife Marilyn want you to know they are here for you. If you need an eye exam, new glasses, or even repair to your glasses, Stack Optical is ready to help. Call to schedule your private appointment today and rest assured every step has been taken to ensure your safety and health at Stack Optical. I've trusted my eye care to them for many years, and you can too. So if it's time for your eye exam or that new pair of glasses, call them today, 303-321-1578. That's 303-321-1578, or check them out at stackoptical.com. At Stack Optical, you'll see the difference.
Hi, Jack Corgan. Shopping for a new car can be a harrowing experience unless you use my favorite car dealer, Len Lyles Chevrolet, just east of I-225 on Colfax, 15 minutes from anywhere. I've worked with them for more than 12 years, and I promise you, Len Lyles is not your typical car dealership. Check out their excellent reviews on Google. They are respectful of your time, not high pressure, and have very progressive pricing because low overhead really does mean lower prices. Len Lyles Chevrolet, go east and pay the least.
Chevy Find new roads.
Got a question for the station? Email info@CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Now back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome to Nutrition and Wellness with Dr. Mark Riggs, brought to you by 5280 Functional Medicine, where there is a better way to take control of your health. And we are glad to have Dr. Riggs back in studio with us. Always great information on our health. So, Dr. Riggs, we made it through a short week here.
I'm doing great, Scott. The week has been going really well so far. So it's been a nice short week, and we're looking forward to a beautiful weekend here.
Absolutely. All right, 5280functionalmed.com. Be sure and check out the website. And if you've missed any of our past shows, Dr. Riggs does a great job putting all the past podcasts on there. And it labels those as well, so you can kind of see a little bit about the topic. But a lot of great information we have gone over here in these year or so now. And I hope that you will always give them a chance to earn your trust. And 720-722-0386 is the number. So, Dr. Riggs, let's recap a little bit from last show, and then we'll get into our topic.
Sure. Yeah, last show we discussed some of the roles of a special vitamin called vitamin D in health and how low blood levels of vitamin D can result in pretty significant health problems. So, we talked about the three ways of obtaining vitamin D through sunlight, which is preferable, also through food, which you can go to our website and find a patient handout under the patient handout tab for nutritional sources of vitamin D. And then the third one is supplementation. Right. And that's an area that can lead some people astray. So we talked about how, a lot of the standard American diet doesn't contain a ton of vitamin D. And by the way, if you are a strict vegetarian or vegan, you're not consuming any animal products at all, that's working even further against you as far as vitamin D. So what do people do? Whether they're eating animal products or not, a lot of people tend to want to supplement with vitamin D. And right. Knowing the amount of vitamin D to supplement with is really crucial to hit a very sweet spot therapeutically as far as serum levels go of vitamin D. And that level, more or less, every organization, Vitamin D Council, American Academy of Physicians, they all have different ranges, but it seems like a good consensus to avoid pathology, either from going too low or too high, is about 50, right, give or take. Mm. So 50 nanograms per deciliter in the blood is kind of what you want to shoot for. And again, vitamin D is it's a prohormone, which means it gets converted into hormone, so it acts like a hormone, and we got to know what those levels are before we go just dousing the system with lots of supplemental vitamin D.
So really, we shouldn't. Is there anything that's safe in just taking as much as you want of any kind of supplement, or should you always kind of do it under that medical supervision?
You probably want to do it under medical supervision, and you probably want to get rechecked fairly regularly for what your vitamin D level is. And vitamin D, I mentioned last show, you can go back and listen to it. Lots of different health benefits of vitamin D, and one of those health benefits happens to be in modulating immune system function. Well, what does that mean? I'm not saying boosting immune system function. I said modulating. So that means if your immune system is overactive, like maybe in the case of an autoimmune condition, vitamin D helps bring that down a little bit. And if your immune system is sort of, down in the dumps, then vitamin D helps to bring it up a little bit. So it's modulatory. It helps bring it to that, optimal zone. And I actually have an article from April 15th of this year from the Journal of Aging Clinical and Experimental Research entitled "The Role of Vitamin D in the Prevention of Coronavirus Disease 2019 Infection and Mortality." And the authors in that study, which was just 6 weeks ago, published 6 weeks ago, concluded that there is an inverse association between cases of coronavirus, COVID-19, and COVID-19 deaths and vitamin D levels. What does that mean? That means that as they observed various populations all around the world at different latitudes and different locations all around the earth, and there was an association between lower vitamin D levels and increased cases and mortality rates. And the higher the vitamin D levels, the lower the number of cases and mortality rates. So interesting observation, and a lot of experts are recommending to get tested for vitamin D, not just COVID-19, but also vitamin D, and to make sure that those levels are in that nice sweet spot around 50.
Right. Well, I'm looking forward to getting my results back. I came over this week, and you did a good job on the blood draw. I didn't pass out, and I only had to get poked once, as they say, and that was good. So it was painless, and looking forward to getting back. What are you seeing, just real quick, from the tests that you've done so far and the results that you've gotten back?
As far as what?
For the COVID-19.
Very, very few positives so far. Very few. And these are patients that would swear that they had it.
Yeah.
So it's good to get tested. It's good to know whether you've been exposed, whether you have developed IgG antibodies to it. But very few that we've come across so far in our practice. And we are continuing to offer that antibody testing, and we'll continue to offer it in the future, because I imagine the scientific literature is going to come out at some point, to let us know whether or not those IgG antibodies do infer immunity or not. We're not sure about that yet. And if so, is there a sort of threshold that a patient has to reach as far as their IgG antibody levels?
Right.
Is there a certain, threshold to hit in order to convey likely immunity? We just don't know these answers yet. So, again, like I mentioned in previous shows, when we do get the answers to these questions, I'll be back and I'll be making everybody aware of that. But yeah, we'll still continue to offer the test in the meantime. It's not a, we hear a lot in the news all the time, in print and on the radio and on TV. And I'm not among the people that are just going to trash a test until it's overwhelmingly proven. Yeah. If it seems like it could be of some benefit, we just don't have all the answers yet, then we will offer it, and we will also make our patients aware of the limitations of that test, which is required by the government and the FDA and all that good stuff, as well it should be. So, but I'm not going to trash all the antibody testing, saying they're completely useless, because at some point in the future, I imagine they're going to come out, and a lot of healthcare providers are going to have to do a complete 180 on trashing that, particular antibody test, when it does come out that it's of benefit. We just need to quantify how beneficial it may be. Right?
Okay, and people can add the. And this is what I did with you after our show.
Added the vitamin D test to the COVID test for $29.
Yep. Yeah.
Super cheap. So I encourage anybody listening to give us a call, and we can knock out either one of those tests or both at the same time.
All right. Good deal.
Today's topic is one that we've been seeing a lot of recently, which is hormone dysfunction. And as you've said in the past, Scott, guys shouldn't just tune out when they hear that word hormone, because both men and women have hormones in their bodies and in their systems in different quantities. And patients with hormone dysfunction at our practice, Scott, primarily they see my wife, right? She's taken a special interest in helping patients both diagnose and treat complex hormone issues. So I'm sort of offering this discussion on behalf of my wife. She is the hormone person in our practice, and I encourage anybody interested after the topic today to give us a call and schedule a consultation with her, because she is excellent at dealing with women and various types of hormone dysregulation. So the hormone issues that are very, very common in our society, they almost always involve numerous underlying lifestyle factors that significantly contribute to their hormone dysregulation. And everything that we've talked about over the past year plus has been regarding a functional approach, and which basically means we diagnose based on root cause of dysfunction, and we treat using conservative care first, not jumping right to a more invasive and more risky and more potentially harmful form of treatment. And so we apply that approach with every patient, including hormone patients, patients with hormone dysregulation. But it's the same across the board. I mean, we apply a functional medicine root cause approach to cardiovascular patients and every other type of patient that we see. And we're trained to determine which patient doesn't belong in our office and belongs to be, you know, needs to be triaged to a more urgent setting, or if we have time to work with this patient on nutritional factors and lifestyle factors. And so, you know, like I said, these issues almost always involve numerous underlying lifestyle factors that contribute to their hormone dysregulation. And it's interesting because several of our instructors back in school used to tell us, they used to harp on us, that hormone dysregulation, the vast majority of cases, is a result of some sort of pathophysiological interference. And when you eliminate that interference, or at least dramatically reduce it, via these lifestyle factors that we counsel our patients on, hormone balance can, in many cases, become restored again. So it's a matter of getting rid of the interference, right? Not sprinkling more hormone necessarily onto an already dysfunctional system.
Right.
Right? How much sense does that make? It's sort of like adding fuel to the fire.
Sure.
So we need to address the underlying causes of the hormone dysfunction and hormone interference, and then we can go ahead and see what shakes out of that, and if need be, take patients to the next level and send them to a person who can custom tailor a particular hormone replacement therapy. But the reason why a lot of that has gone historically not well with regards to hormone replacement therapy is because of what I just said. It's because conventional medicine tends not to look at underlying drivers of hormone dysfunction, which have been identified in the scientific literature to be very common, but instead just go straight to, oh, your level looks low, let's bump it up with some hormone replacement, and not looking at any underlying causes as to why that might be low in the first place.
And let me just give a little warning too, and I'll say this, but there's a lot of, I don't know, use the word clinic, a lot of storefronts that'll talk about hormone boosting and stuff, and they check nothing. If you just walk in there and tell them that you're low energy, man, they'll give you shots, they'll do whatever. That's not a good thing, is it?
Not necessarily,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it may be for some people, but I think for a lot of people out there that are getting that, what I call the quick fix band-aid approach therapy, the injections, the creams, the salves, the troches, all that stuff, without addressing the underlying drivers of dysfunction.
Right.
If your doctor is not doing anything else but taking your symptoms, taking a blood hormone level and of your sex hormones, and then prescribing hormone, I wouldn't recommend that to my family members. So I'm not going to recommend that to my patients. I want at least a more comprehensive workup and a more comprehensive understanding of what's going on in this patient's body with their hormones so that I can more accurately tailor a treatment plan that not only may involve tailored replacement, but it should also involve a variety of lifestyle factors and lifestyle modifications to at least be mindful of, to at least be aware of, that these things have been documented in the scientific literature to disrupt hormone signaling, to disrupt hormone detoxification, production, sensitization, right? So, you know, that saying that my instructor said back in school about how it's most of the time it involves various levels of, you know, interference with hormone signaling, that's exactly what we've found to be true in our practice. And like I said, my wife does a tremendous job diagnosing and managing and explaining to a lot of ladies, but some men, who come in with hormone-related dysfunction. And it starts with a diagnosis. Now, managing patients with complicated hormone issues is far from an exact science, right? This is why we doctors refer to what we do as practice,
right?
It's literally a practice. Sounds silly, but dealing with patients with complicated hormone issues is more of an art form. It's not an exact science. It is a practice. It's an art form. And this is because endocrinology, or the study, the science of hormones, it's extremely complicated.
Right.
Right. So I don't claim to be smart enough to be able to just manipulate a person's incredibly complicated hormone physiology by thinking that I can just sprinkle more hormone into their system, like mm-hmm. I mentioned, like hormone replacement therapy, even though that is the current standard of care in our country,
right?
And as I mentioned, that has historically led to some pretty devastating adverse effects for some people. Right. Not good. And our job is to do no harm, and we should know better, and we should be doing better, but again, I'll kind of go back to what we've talked about in previous shows. How good can you do in a typical 8 to 12 minute doctor visit, right? Mm-hmm. How good can you possibly be?
Sure.
How deep can you possibly go into these lifestyle factors that we know drive hormone dysfunction? So what we do in our practice, Scott, and you've gotten a taste of it a little bit already, is we run advanced diagnostic testing of patients' sex and stress hormones regarding the topic for today, and the metabolites of these sex and stress hormones to better understand how these hormones are being produced, transported throughout the body, detoxified or eliminated, and as well as the nutritional or dietary factors that influence cellular response to hormones. Those are four huge factors mm-hmm. that I will tell you most doctors are not giving their due diligence to, right? Production, transportation, detoxification, and sensitization of hormones. Those are the four pillars of hormone health that we focus on in our patients when we're running advanced diagnostic testing. So in essence, we do what we do with other complicated cases. We use that functional medicine approach, which involves a more comprehensive evaluation and a more conservative treatment strategy. Because if we can better identify how these hormones are being produced, transported, detoxified, and their sensitivity, then we can apply a much more comprehensive, nuanced, and tailored treatment approach that doesn't necessarily jump to that straight to that hormone replacement therapy in all cases. So the advanced testing that we use is a take-home urine test. So you urinate on test strips, you let it dry, and then you put them back into a plastic bag, into an envelope, and these patients mail it out, and okay. I get the results back. And it measures, this specific test measures the amount of free hormone, like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, cortisol, melatonin. It measures the amount of free hormone and the metabolites of several of these hormones. And this provides us with a much more detailed picture of what's going on with your hormones besides the information you get from blood levels of hormones. A blood test, Scott, measures mostly bound hormone because hormones are fat-soluble chemicals and the blood is mostly water. Hormones need to be bound to carrier proteins in order to be transferred throughout the blood. Basically, when we measure blood levels of hormones, because it's mostly bound, it's not an accurate representation of the amount of hormone that's interfacing with the effector tissue that it's meant for.
Okay.
It's more of a representation of the amount of hormone that the gonads are producing. Right? So this is why a dried urine test is so useful. The dried urine test depicts and represents the free unbound hormone that more closely represents what's being utilized by the effector tissues. And this test also gives us an idea of how you're breaking down and metabolizing things like estrogen. The significance of that, how you are breaking down and metabolizing estrogen, is because some people's bodies favor a form of estrogen that happens to be protective against hormone-related cancers, right? So you got breast cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, cervical cancer, those types of cancers that are estrogen-dominant cancers. So some forms of estrogen that we metabolize and break down predispose us to those types of cancers. And some breakdown metabolites of estrogen produce harmful forms of estrogen metabolites that predispose us to dangerous and proliferative forms of cancers. So this is something that patients need to know about. If they're either considering hormone replacement therapy, if they're already on hormone replacement therapy, mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many health talks I've given around the Denver metro area. And after I give the talk about hormones and hormone dysfunction, I get women who are either considering hormone replacement therapy or they're already taking it. And maybe they, you know, maybe they had mixed feelings about it, sure. right? And they're curious because I just told them that this test can help you determine, you know, if that is appropriate for you based on how you're breaking down your estrogen metabolites and if you're predisposed to these harmful metabolites that predispose you to estrogen-dominant cancers, well, then that might not be something that's so great, right? So so they come in and they take this test that we run. So this test, this dried urine test that we run is incredibly comprehensive. It shows us all everything that's going on with free hormones and their metabolites, how these harmful estrogens or versus protective estrogens might be being broken down, how well a person is able to detox those estrogens, or if detoxification is impaired. What if you're producing too many harmful estrogen metabolites and you have a problem detoxifying and eliminating mm-hmm. those harmful estrogens? That's basically like a 1-2 kick in the pants, sure. right?
Yeah, no doubt.
So that is definitely going to increase your risk for problems. And in addition, this particular test also looks at stress hormones, because when it comes to managing sex hormone dysfunction, the very, very first thing we need to investigate is stress hormone dysfunction, adrenal hormone dysfunction, in right. other words. And so it does a comprehensive look at free cortisol, metabolized cortisol, and melatonin, and some of their metabolites as well, to see if stress hormone dysfunction is also playing a role in sex hormone dysfunction. Because I'll say that many women across America are suffering from estrogen dominance that are causing symptoms and that are predisposing to problems like cancer. It's been documented in the scientific literature. And adrenal problems like significant and prolonged release of the stress hormone, the adrenal hormone cortisol, that suppresses progesterone. Well, a lot of these symptoms that females are suffering from that are related to their sex hormones has to do with estrogen dominance. What does that mean? That it really means relative estrogen dominance. It means that estrogen, even if estrogen is low, mm-hmm. if progesterone is really, really low
right.
in comparison, they have a relative estrogen dominance. And in that case, what we've identified is adrenal problems and cortisol problems suppress progesterone and can exacerbate that estrogen dominance that leads to symptoms and leads to pathology. Mm-hmm. So we've got to address adrenal problems. That's one of the main culprits when it comes to hormone dysfunction. Another main culprit that we address next is thyroid problems. And I've talked about this for an entire show in the past. You can check out the radio show podcast tab. I think it might be episode 10 or 11 on thyroid dysfunction. But as it relates to sex hormone dysfunction and hormone dysregulation, thyroid problems can also drive sex hormone problems. So we also have to do a more comprehensive dive into a person's thyroid hormone situation than what is typical in a conventional setting. We don't just run TSH and maybe total T4. We run free T3, free T4, total T3, total T4, TSH, reverse T3, and thyroid antibodies, and sometimes thyroid binding globulin if we suspect one of these estrogen dominant situations, because all of those pieces of the thyroid puzzle must be gathered to completely understand what's going on, mm-hmm. not just with the thyroid, but maybe it's an immune system problem. Maybe it's a stress-related problem that's affecting the thyroid. So I call it thyroid, any type of thyroid-related dysfunction, not just thyroid problem.
Sure.
You know, that's main culprit number two. Okay. We talked to the main culprits that affect hormone dysfunction that need to be addressed before diving right into fueling a potential fire that is a dysfunctional sex hormone pathway. We have to address the underlying causes of sex hormone dysfunction, and those are adrenal problems, thyroid problems. Number three is insulin resistance. We've talked about this whenever I've talked about type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm. right? Insulin resistance is the underlying hallmark of type 2 diabetes. Insulin resistance and diabetes are the fastest growing chronic condition in the United States. It's resulting in tons of hormone dysregulation. It's resulting in tons of hormone-related pathologies, and it negatively impacts sex hormone function. And so insulin resistance absolutely has to be addressed prior to anything else related to dealing with sex hormone, and certainly prior to just sprinkling more hormone into the mix. And next, and lastly, would be chemical exposures. These are things that have been identified in the scientific literature to be known endocrine disruptors, hormone disruptors. And some of these things include, different chemicals like BPA and things that are found in beauty products and cosmetics and plastics and people that microwave plastics and eat out of those food products. And they leave bottles of water in the back of their car that get a lot of sunshine on it and, things like that. So we've got to be more cognizant of the cosmetic products that we use and the plastics and other types of chemicals that we're exposed to, because many of them are known hormone disruptors. So this is what we do, Scott. We take our patients through. We check their hormone levels. We check their hormone metabolites. We check their cortisol levels and any type of cortisol imbalance. We look at blood sugar dysregulation and potential insulin resistance. We also might run a chemical sensitivity test, mm-hmm. or a chemical toxicity test to see if they have any of these exposures or sensitivities to these chemicals. And then we apply a functional approach, which is just working that backwards.
Sure.
And I'm almost on the verge of, chuckling here right now, because it feels to me, this seems like common sense medicine.
Right.
It's just not being practiced. Sure. In our current Western model. So this is how it should work. We need to identify the underlying causes, starting with a more comprehensive diagnosis, which we use in part due to this dried urine test. And then we educate our patients on these various evidence-based and evidence-informed lifestyle factors that can help bring their hormones back into balance well before going to the highly invasive and potentially harmful hormone replacement therapy that has historically not worked out for quite a few people. So if anybody is interested, please give us a call.
All right. 720-722-0386. Also, hey, go and get the antibody test. Add that vitamin D test for only $29. 5280 Functional Medicine, 5280functionalmed.com. Dr. Riggs, always great information. Thank you very much. Don't go anywhere. Thank you for joining us. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.